Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." May God bless this reading to us and Chris as he comes in just a moment. Before he does so,
do have a seat, folks. We had to admit it was a long, long way down. So we peered a bit further. Yeah, it was a long way down, and the Colorado River was gushing at the very bottom of the ravine. We inched a little bit further forward and then got scared and got back in our big American car that we picked up that morning. It had been a really good trip, and now we just needed to drive to the airport. So I got into that big American car that I picked up this morning and realised, perhaps for the first time, that it was an automatic, which I'd never driven before. So, reverse. Sounds good. So we put it in reverse, foot on the gas, and we move forward towards the rather inadequate fence between us and the very big ravine. My wife gives me a slightly quizzical look. We wiggle again. I put my foot on the gas, and we jump forward another few feet, forward and not back. "Is there some other button you should be pressing, darling?" We look on the dashboard. There's a bit that's saying, you know, "British people press here." But no, this time I said, "It'll be fine this time. I've just probably not got it in gear properly. I'll use brute force." So we do a bit of brute force, put it in reverse, foot on the gas. And this time we go quite a way forward, it feels. Jo does the best thing she can. She yells, gets out of the car with the children. So I'm now on my own, slightly worried, and really quite close to the fence now. Once more, we try. I must be doing something really basic wrong. Once more, in reverse, foot on the gas, and no. This time we're up against the fence. So the thought of, you know, ending my life down the Colorado River doesn't appeal at that particular moment. So I am extremely brave, and I go and ask for help. There's a guy a few feet away getting into his car, and I do my sort of British abroad. "I'm terribly sorry. I don't appear to be able to work one of your wonderful American machines. How do I get it to reverse?" He looks at me as though I'm stupid and says, "You put it in reverse." I've done that, put it in reverse. And then he says, well, buddy, what you got to do is you've got to put it reverse. You've got to put your foot on the gas and you've got to go for it. You've got to put it on the gas, your foot on the gas and go for it. Because the car will roll forward a few feet until it catches and then it'll go back. And he smiles a winsome smile and gets back into his 4x4 and drives off. So, with my children planning my funeral as I watch, my wife checking her life assurance, we get back in the car Well, I get back in the car, and I do exactly what it says. This time, I really do rev it quite hard, and it goes forward for a sickening couple of feet, and then, lo and behold, it lurches backward, and the panic is over. Are you brave? Are you fearless like a knight of old, or a part-time member of the SAS? Or do you hide behind the sofa at the first opportunity? I am not a brave person. I make the cowardly lion from the Wizard of Oz look like James Bond. But have you ever thought that fear and bravery are related to faith? Because there are times when fear does lead to faith. One common saying during the Second World War was that there are no atheists in foxholes. When you're staring the Grim Reaper in the face, it apparently does wonders for your prayer life. Now, you might think that it's somehow unworthy and inferior to come to God on that basis, out of fear. What parent would want their child to come to them driven solely by fear? Well, of course, there would be something seriously wrong with any relationship if a child came to their parents only when they were frightened. But surely any parent worth their salt wants their child to come to them when fear grips their heart so they can receive comfort and know they are loved and secure. So why not the greatest parent of all, our loving God? So this morning, as we look again at another of the encounters that Jesus has, we're looking at the incident with Peter, which illustrates well how sometimes desperation and fear and bravery all link into deeper devotion. And if you've got the passage that David read, have a look at it, because it's a desperate situation that the disciples find themselves in. And it's laid out for us by Matthew, who's writing the account. Now, Matthew is a tax collector, much happier at home, I suspect, on dry land with an Excel spreadsheet and a calculator. He probably wasn't very happy in the boat anyway. And we're told that Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And when he came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. It says that Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. He forced them into it. Now, why would he do that? Well, it's because of what's just happened. If you read up from our passage, you'll see that what has just happened is the feeding of the 5,000, a miracle like there had never been before. And so you can imagine the reaction of the people when from 5 loaves and 2 fishes, Jesus provided a banquet. The atmosphere would have been electric. People would have picked up the signal straight away. God's appointed leader had finally arrived. And that's exactly what they were doing. John, in his gospel, tells us that at this point, the people wanted to make Jesus king and march on Jerusalem. Messiah fever was in the air. And so to preserve his disciples from getting infected with this sort of idea, he removes everyone lock, stock and barrel. The disciples are bundled into a boat, the crowds are told to go home, and Jesus ascends the mountain to pray. Now, about evening, probably about 6 o'clock, is when that storm struck with shocking immediacy. The sun had scarcely gone down when the typhoon winds began to roar. And so the disciples begin what must have been one of the worst nights of their lives. Matthew tells us the boat was being buffeted by the waves, literally battered. What's more, the wind was against the boat, pushing the disciples further and further away from their destination and closer to disaster. The disciples must have been confused, disillusioned, disappointed, and scared spitless. What should have been a glorious victory march to oust the Romans had turned to be a one-way trip to the bottom of the lake on the first century equivalent of the Titanic. The night was dark, the sea was rough, and the situation was apparently hopeless. The one who could save them wasn't even with them. He was miles away on land praying. Good for him, bad for us, they would have thought. Now, they had been in a storm together with Jesus once before, But that was different because Jesus had then been with them and he had stilled the storm. But what possible hope could they have now that he would rescue them? Even if he wanted to help them, he couldn't get to them. What chance was there of him getting hold of a boat and being able to row out in the night? They were miles away, invisible in the darkness. All 12 of them working hard together were having difficulty keeping that boat afloat. What chance would one man have? The short answer was none. So for hours during the night they struggled, drenched with water, shivering with fear and cold, muscles screaming with the sheer physical strain, and still the nightmare continued with no end in sight. But then, just before dawn, the impossible happened, and Jesus did come. He went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Now, isn't that just the way it goes? There you are in the Christian life, wanting to obey Jesus, just like these disciples had done. They got into the boat as they were ordered. They might have been resentful, but they had at least not been disobedient. They got into the boat, and then the storm had broken. And the storm comes with different clouds for each of us. The baby gets ill. The job is lost.